Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's Sean Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, as you may recall from a couple of other appearances on the program, the CMAK, Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, was created in memory of Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski to capture his competitive spirit and vitality in creating a charity in his honor with a focus on health and wellness for children and their families. And today we're calling on all bikers and those who love them and those who know them to come out to the organization's fifth memorial ride, and to any others interested in supporting or learning more about the foundation's many family-oriented activities throughout the summer. Then we're heading over to Danbury, one of Connecticut's legacy tree cities, to chat with the city's mayor and a representative from the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection about why the Tree City USA program is so strong in Connecticut and so important to the environmental health of our residents and communities. Then we're going to key in on a local group that's playing an important role in saving our state's forests and open space. We'll be talking with the director of the Aspetuck Land Trust, which just announced a partnership with the neighboring Wilton Land Conservation Trust to enhance a larger regional land preservation effort called the Hudson to Housatonic Regional Conservation Partnership. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. The highly acclaimed Creative Youth Productions brings its latest original show called Lights Out to the Downtown Cabaret Theater in Bridgeport Thursday, May 24th, with two shows. There'll be a matinee at 11 a.m. free to schools and a 7 p.m. evening performance. CYP is partnering with the Wakeman Boys and Girls Club in Black Rock at the Smilo Burroughs Clubhouse to bring the after-school program called Youth Leadership Through the Arts to young people ages 10 to 18. CYP empowers youth with jobs where they mentor other youth in the performing arts. They show leadership through writing, directing, choreography, music, and storytelling, and youth leaders lead the other participating youth through creating, teamwork, and problem solving. If you'd like more information or to reserve tickets for their upcoming show, visit cypkids.org. Well, it's great to welcome back a good friend to the program this morning. We're on the line with Rebecca Kowalski. She and her family established the CMAK, Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation, in memory of their son, Chase Michael Anthony Kowalski, who was lost at the Sandy Hook School in December 2012. This organization, as you've heard from previous appearances on the program, has pursued programs and initiatives that encourage personal improvement, healthy lifestyles, and strong family and communities. And today, we hope we will be asking all bikers who are listening, or all people who know bikers, to get in touch with their biker friends to come out for the motorcycle ride, the Crazy Eight ride for Chase, which is scheduled to be happening. However, as we tape this a couple of days in advance, we're wondering about the wiggy weather. So there is a possibility it may be postponed to Father's Day, in which case we would just ask folks that hear this program on Sunday morning who may be thinking of participating in the race to just go out to the Crazy Eights. That's a number eight, Crazy Eights Ride for Chase, and that's Ride the number 4 Chase on Facebook. Crazy Eights Ride for Chase on Facebook to learn whether or not the ride is actually going to be happening today. And we'll go to Rebecca for some of those details. But first, Rebecca, thanks for joining us on the program today. We put this together really fast, but we're glad to be able to promote this upcoming ride, because it's just another way that you guys are so creative in getting as many people involved with this cause as possible.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having us on such short notice and promoting the bike ride. The Crazy Eight Ride for Chase is a motorcycle ride / poker run, and we have, you know, first, second, and third place cash prizes for the winners of the top hands.
Mm-hmm. And folks who do the motorcycle thing, even if they've never done a poker run before, they're familiar with the routine. You just go from site to site, and every time you check in, you get a card, and whoever has the winning hand at the end of the ride? Is there some sort of a trophy, a plaque, a prize? What does the winning hand get?
Yeah, so the top three hands will have, the first hand, top hand, will have a $200 cash prize. Second hand gets a $150 cash prize, and third will get a $75 cash prize.
Excellent. And this is not the first of these rides. You've had a couple in the past so far, right?
Yeah, this is actually our fifth annual, which is really great. We've been growing it organically and just kind of going by word of mouth. But this year we're kind of trying to put it out there to, you know what, we've been doing it for the past 4 years. We're very comfortable, and we really think we can handle a lot more bikes. Last year we had about 200 bikes in the event, and then another 150 people came that weren't motorcycle riders, just for the luncheon that starts at noon at Colonial Tavern, and entertainment by Screaming Eagle Band.
So this is happening in Oxford, right adjacent to the Naugatuck Valley and Litchfield County, both which have myriad motorcyclists and motorcycle enthusiasts in the populations there. So you're holding this in an ideal location, and Colonial Tavern, they're great folks. I've done a number of fundraisers there for a wide variety of organizations. They are so responsive over there. So we definitely want to shout them out. And kudos to the folks over in Oxford at Colonial Tavern for hosting this.
Oh, absolutely. Tom is great. He's been so generous with us. The last two, you know, last year was our first year there. We had changed the venue. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And he is. He's so accommodating. Great, great person to work with.
So for folks that, as we said earlier, may not have heard prior programs or be as familiar as they might with the CMAK Foundation, just give us a little reminder about why you have gone this route and have established this network where it's like, you know, bikers are coming and golfers are coming and families are coming. And there's and this has really kind of pulled the lid off the situation for so many families where their kids may not be interested in playing like team sports, but they really still need to get out there and kind of get involved in some physical recreation.
Well, the foundation started because Chase, Chase came to me in a vision and shared with me that we were going to change the world, and we didn't quite know what that was going to look like. And through honoring his spirit, we came to realize that triathlon was, you know, he did his first triathlon at the age of six, and the self-esteem boost that gave him was immense. So, in honoring him, we figured that would be a really nice thing to do for other children, and we, you know, proceeded with a 6-week training program through the WISE. And the first year we had three programs in Waterbury, Trumbull, and Brookfield, Connecticut. And to this year, we'll have 26 programs for each one of the 26 angels that we've lost in three different states.
Right, yeah, I see there's an event in Clover, South Carolina, one coming up in Newport, Rhode Island. Of course, several events happening in Connecticut. So once again, if folks are just tuning in, we're speaking with Rebecca Kowalski, who, along with her family, have established the CMAK Sandy Hook Memorial Foundation in memory of Rebecca's son, who was tragically lost at Sandy Hook in 2012. Each year since, they have had this great Crazy Eights Ride for Chase motorcycle ride. The latest one is supposed to be happening later today in Oxford at Colonial Tavern. And Rebecca, what time is check-in?
Registration starts at 9 to 10:30, and the first group of riders will be able to leave at 10:30. And they'll take a beautiful, picturesque ride through Litchfield County, and we have Naugatuck. I think it's Naugatuck County. Mm-hmm. And they'll have four stops. We'll start at Colonial Tavern. We have four stops. We have a photo op close to the Stevenson Dam, mm-hmm. where you'll have your pictures taken, and then each stop, you'll grab a card, and then you're also, if you draw an eight, you'll be in a drawing for a cash prize of the, it's called the Crazy Eights raffle prize, and then back to Colonial Tavern for your last card.
And a picnic and party and live music and refreshments and all kinds of great stuff. But this is by far not the only event that's happening in the coming weeks and months to benefit this fantastic organization. So the next one that's coming up is just in another couple of weeks on June 3rd. It's the Sprint for Monroe and Race for Chase Kids Fun Run. Tell us about that, Rebecca.
Right. So with our ties to Monroe, since Stephen and I both grew up there, Sprint for Monroe has been instrumental in helping us fundraise. So they've renamed the Kids Fun Run Race for Chase. The kids will get T-shirts that have our logo on it, and it's just a really nice 5K through the streets of Monroe. Mm. And then the next event we have is our Kids Triathlon, which is July 8th, also in Monroe, at Great Hollow Lake. So that's open to any child between the ages of 6 to 12 who'd like to compete in their first triathlon.
Mm-hmm. And then just a couple weeks later, on July 21st, you bring it all back to Newtown for the Sandy Hook 5K?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. The Sandy Hook 5K will be going on, I think is the 21st or
July,
the 18th?
July 21st, I've got here.
Okay. Yeah. All right, perfect. Okay, yep, that's the 5K that will help support any of the foundations that were started through the tragedy of...
Oh, right. So this isn't a Race for Chase event. This is a this is a 5K, and all of the proceeds are split amongst all of the families, all the surviving families of the Sandy Hook tragedy. So that is on July 21st in Newtown, and then the next Race for Chase event brings you down to Clover, South Carolina. What's the tie down to Clover?
Clover, South Carolina was because of Coach Pat Kelsey from Winthrop University. Mm. He had done a news piece and had talked about, you know, the things that needed to be changed in our country. And it was just something that resonated with us. So we became friends. And then because of that connection, we did a satellite pilot program down there 2 years ago, and it took off and went so well that the Y has just been growing it, and now we're up to 6 programs in that area.
Excellent.
So we do a finale in Clover, and then the same thing. We started with 2 pilot programs in Rhode Island last year, and those that also has grown to, I believe, 5 or 6 programs.
Mm-hmm.
This year, so we'll be at Fort Adams for their finale.
That's August 12th.
August.
Yep. And then the day before that, in the last minute or so that we have with you, Rebecca, we've got the Chase Kowalski Memorial Golf Tournament coming up on August 11th. Where's that happening?
And that's up in Barrington, New Hampshire. A friend of mine from high school started the golf tournament for us, and she has this great little place called Lake Nipo. Country club, I guess
you call it.
And so she had started the golf tournament for Chase in his honor, and we've been also growing that organically. Everything seems to just, you know, more word of mouth and getting more comfortable, and that'll be also our 5th year with the golf tournament.
Fantastic. Well, this all has been established and is touching so many thousands of lives as a result of memorializing Chase, your son, and the students and educators at Sandy Hook. You hope to be a positive force, and you are inspiring community healing through family and children-focused initiatives with the CMAK Foundation. By focusing on emotional healing and physical health and wellness, they're positively changing these lives for children and their families. And don't forget, we hope that the weather will not postpone it till Father's Day, but it may. But we do want you to come out if you're a motorcyclist or somebody who just loves to have a good time and wants to benefit this cause for the Crazy Eights Ride for Chase. Registration begins at 9 o'clock this morning at Colonial Tavern in Oxford, or will be postponed till Father's Day if it rains. And you just need to go to the Crazy Eights Ride for Chase Facebook page on Sunday morning to learn whether or not we've got a weather delay. But in the meantime, Rebecca Kowalski, we thank you once again for being part of the program and all the great work you're doing. Good luck with the ride and the races and the golf tournament and all the incredible stuff that's going on with the CMAK Foundation. Thanks for being on the program. If you want to learn more about all the other activities that are happening besides the bike ride today, you can go to the CMAKFoundation.org website, learn how to volunteer, learn how to get your family involved at CMAKFoundation.org. If we didn't turn off the highway, we would have ended up in New York. But here we are down near the end of 84 on the far west end of the state in Danbury today, celebrating trees all over the state of Connecticut. We're here in Danbury today and so pleased to be joined by Chris Donnelly, who is the Urban Forestry Coordinator for Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection's Forestry Division. And we are visiting here with him in Danbury because Danbury is a legacy tree city here in the state of Connecticut and across the country. They are a Tree City USA designee for 28 years running, one of the oldest Tree City USA contiguously running honors in the state of Connecticut. And all of this information came to light in and around Arbor Day when the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection announced the designation of 18 Tree City USAs this year within Connecticut. So that's a pretty decent number, Chris. Obviously, anyone could do better, but that seems like, and as I look across the list, you know, they're cast across the state, you know, kind of pretty evenly divided.
That's true. Danbury, of course, is one of the longest running Tree City USAs, and is one of the ones, for instance, that's in Fairfield County. But we have Tree Cities spread all the way out to New London County. We have them in Hartford County, certainly New Haven County. In addition, we have Tree City USAs that are small towns. Our largest cities in Connecticut, each of them, Bridgeport, New Haven, Hartford, Stamford, are all Tree City USAs. So, yeah, it's a good program and has an appeal for a lot of communities.
Yeah, and congratulations also to Greenwich because this is their first year celebrating as a Tree City USA.
Yes, I'm very pleased to welcome Greenwich aboard. Greenwich has been a leadership community with regards to its tree program for a while. But took a little bit of a nudge, but we finally got them on board as a Tree City USA.
Great. Well, let's broaden the scope here and take it up a little bit and look at some of the backstory and the information that people need to know. Aside from the fact that it started in 1976, tell us a little bit more about what folks would need to know about Tree Cities, whether they live in one or aspire to.
Okay. The Tree City USA program itself is a product of the Arbor Day Foundation. Used to be called the National Arbor Day Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's based in Nebraska. It follows in the steps of Sterling Morton, who essentially looked at the plains and said, we need more trees out here. Trees are going to be essential to keeping quality of life, protecting the farmland out in that wide open, windswept state. There actually a fellow who followed along in his footsteps, a fellow named Birdsley Northrup, took that idea and said it's a great idea, but it should be brought into the school system. We should make it something that young people relate to. And so he's the one that helped make Arbor Day a program for schools throughout the, not just the United States, but throughout the world. So the Arbor Day Foundation is kind of the inheritor of that type of program. When they formed in 1972, one of the things that they were very interested in is seeing municipal leadership with regards to urban forestry programs, to trees in communities. And so they established this Tree City USA program. They have it based around four standards. The first standard is that each community has professional leadership on their tree program. Second standard, that there be an ordinance within that community geared towards not just protecting trees, but establishing a process by which trees are planted and maintained. Mm-hmm. Third part of the program is a minimum investment by that community, $2 per capita. And then finally, the fun part is that every year there be a Arbor Day celebration, including the reading of an Arbor Day proclamation. So we have 18 communities in Connecticut this past year that have met those standards. And so this Arbor Day, we celebrate these Tree City USAs in Connecticut.
Excellent. So it's, I guess it's important to note at this juncture that just because a community is not a Tree City USA doesn't mean it's not well forested and its forests and trees are not the beneficiaries of good stewardship.
Very true. Absolutely. One of the things that I like to say, I could even say I like to brag about a little bit, is that Connecticut has long been in the leadership with regards to tree programs, taking a lead role, on, especially in a couple of areas. Since 1901, it has had a law in the books that establishes tree wardens in each of the municipalities. And so each community in Connecticut must have an individual designated who has care and control as a responsibility for the trees in those communities. And also, since 1919, we've had a law in the books that requires that people who do commercial tree care be licensed. These are two standards that we've had for, in each case, almost a century or more, that other states around the country, that's what they strive for. So we are in a good position, and the communities in Connecticut, by and large, take their trees to heart. They recognize the importance and value of trees and are committed to them.
Over the years, you've gotten to know a lot of the professionals who are either municipally designated or who work in concert with those municipal officials, including some who have worked here in Danbury for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the relationships that I cherish is the relationship with the tree wardens. The tree wardens themselves, so just last year, celebrated their 25th anniversary of the Tree Wardens Association.
Wow.
Very good organization. It's a funny position to be a tree warden because although each community has one, in each community there is only one. And so in some ways it might feel like a lonely job. Other people within municipal government don't exactly know what a tree warden does, and the tree warden doesn't exactly know how to, explain his or her problems to other tree wardens. So the Tree Wardens Association came about. It was founded through a large effort by a professor at the University of Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
But in any case, this organization has proven to be a very strong component in the current picture with regards to trees in Connecticut. So one of the things that I appreciate is I get to go to Tree Warden Association meetings. I meet with the tree wardens. I hope I help them out in terms of keeping them current with some of the new ideas and approaches that have come along with regards to urban forestry. And I've come to know them as a very dedicated group.
Maybe not specifically about Danbury, but for cities like Danbury or large towns, give us a little bit of an idea of both, the power and the responsibility that tree wardens have to those communities and how they play a role typically in concert with other municipal agencies like Public Works or the Parks and Recs departments in helping communities, once again, steward their tree care responsibly.
Okay, well, if I could paraphrase my good friend Jim Gavone, who's president of the Tree Wardens Association, he cites two main goals for the the tree wardens in general. One is to safeguard public safety because, you know, of course, let's face it, trees that are not maintained, trees that are planted in the wrong place, have weak roots and so on, can become a real public safety hazard. So that's a key role of the tree warden. Their ability to know the trees, to be able to assess the trees, and to take care of handle problems before they become problems. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, trees are such an obvious asset to a community for any number of reasons. We really do need trees. And so the role of the tree warden is to improve and even expand the urban tree canopy in mm-hmm. communities. So that's kind of a nutshell what tree wardens are about.
So then do municipal tree wardens in communities that have small or large parcels of state-owned land, do they interface with an office like yours when issues are brought to their attention within their municipality but not on municipal property?
Complex question.
How do tree wardens work with the state when things are brought to the attention of them, not in regards to municipal land, but on state land?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the important thing to realize is that, of course, tree wardens' major responsibility is with regards to the street trees. Yeah. And so the majority of roads in any community are municipally owned, but not all. Mm-hmm. Many of our major routes are DOT lands. Mm-hmm. And so DOT has a responsibility for care of those trees. They work very closely with tree wardens. Mm-hmm. I don't work for DOT, so I don't have any direct interaction with regards to state-owned trees mm-hmm. that are the responsibility of the Department of Transportation. But, of course, the DOT has a staff that does have that responsibility. And so there are regions set up throughout the state. There's an arborist in each of these regions, and they do have that direct interaction. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, DEP has a responsibility for a big part of the land base in Connecticut. Something like 5% of the land in Connecticut is under DEP control. A large proportion of that is state forest land. And I want to bring that up because, of course, I work for the Division of Forestry. Mm-hmm. My responsibility is towards the urban side of the equation and working with the municipalities and with DOT and with private landowners and so on. But we have a portion of our staff that is dedicated to managing those state lands and to take responsibility for the state forests throughout Connecticut.
Very good. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more about some of the exciting things going on here in Danbury. We're going to talk to the Danbury Mayor. Chris Donnelly, who is with us today, he's the Urban Forestry Coordinator for Connecticut DEEP's Forestry Division. Folks, stick with us. Chris, stick with us. We'll bring the mayor in and we'll talk a little bit more when we come back from this break.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click onto Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Lockwood Matthews Mansion Museum is launching its scavenger hunt in collaboration with the Center for Contemporary Printmaking and Stepping Stones Museum for Children. It's coming up on Sunday, June 3rd from 2 to 4 at Matthews Park in Norwalk. Participants will search for some of the most mysterious symbols, architectural details, objects, and history on the exterior facades of all three buildings and inside the mansion. Scavenger hunters will be able to play alone or as a team, but they'll need to bring their A game and power of observation to win the top prize. Children must be accompanied by an adult or legal guardian. And for more information on the scavenger hunt and tours and programs, just visit LockwoodMatthewsMansion.com.
All right, we're back here in Danbury with Chris Donnelly. He's the Urban Forestry Coordinator for Connecticut's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, DEEP's Forestry Division. We are celebrating Tree City USAs that are all across the state of Connecticut. We're here in Danbury today because it is one of the legacy communities in the state, 28 years running as a Tree City USA community, only being edged out by a couple of communities across the state here. Fairfield, particularly, and Stamford, both celebrating 30 years. And also, as we mentioned, one of Stamford's neighbors, Greenwich, just celebrating their first year. So a bunch of towns in between, large and small. But Chris Donnelly, when you come into Danbury, what are some of the things that you notice when you cast your gaze upward and look at the trees?
Well, I'm actually a big fan of the Central Green in Danbury, especially this time of year. They've got a great mix of shade trees and flowering trees, and so I just like to walk around with my camera and take some really great tree pictures. But it's not just the center of the city. Drive or walk throughout Danbury and go out into the neighborhoods, and this is true throughout Connecticut. Every neighborhood is different. And one of the things that really characterizes neighborhoods, one of the ways you get to know some of the neighborhoods is by their trees. The ones that line the street, the great ones that people have in their yards, or the ones that are in the parks. And so that can be a real pleasure to visit, and to especially the older, larger trees, because you know they have a story to tell. And you look around you and you start to imbibe that story that those trees are telling.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that and the benefits of trees in the last few minutes that we have with you. All right, we're going to give Chris a break now and meet Mayor Mark Bunn. We've run into here at the City Hall. Mayor, Chris was just saying how one of the key features of downtown Danbury is the gorgeously treed Central Green area just adjacent to where we're standing right now, but also the outskirts of Danbury. It's kind of like the bullseye in the middle plus being completely surrounded by trees. I wanted to ask you, do you have memories of being told to get outside and play in the woods as a child?
Oh, my mother used to lock the door till 5 o'clock, so you weren't allowed in the house. And she would say, go play, get out. But anyways, we're very proud of our trees, and we've actually done a lot of work at preserving and protecting open space as well. If you go down Main Street, or whether you go, like you say, to the outskirts of our city, you'll see that we really worship our trees here. We're proud of them, and we're proud of all the great things they do for our environment.
When folks are driving around with realtors looking for a place to live, or businesses are sending their minions out to check out communities for where they may be relocating entire workforces, this is certainly a key item to tout, one of the legacy Tree City communities here in Connecticut, 28 years.
Well, no question, it's a quality of life issue, and people want to feel like they're in nature and that the community respects nature as well. And even our businesses have embraced that. You know, every Arbor Day, we plant dozens of trees all over the city. We have our children help plant them and dig holes and put trees up all over the city. So it's really good to see both businesses and the community kind of embrace trees here in Danbury. And they provide a lot of good things for us, so we should be thankful that we have them.
And in terms of future plans for environmental preservation, anything on the drawing board as far as ideas for, as you said earlier, additional acquisition of open space or enhancement, maybe some pocket parks, anything like that on your drawing board?
Well, we just added 65 acres about 2 weeks ago, a pristine ground that's an apple orchard as well as walking trails. It's now all been preserved and protected and purchased by the city. And I just had will to the city in my name about 40 acres on the east side of the city, adjacent to one of our larger parks, That also includes a farmhouse, but some beautiful, beautiful land there that will be protected and preserved forever mm-hmm. for our residents to enjoy.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about people coming in to either work or live here, but Danbury, as a result of its Tree City designation and a lot of the open space that you mentioned, is also a destination for people to just come and visit. It's not just about great restaurants or theater or a wonderful Main Street with all the businesses and things that you offer or the college campuses, but also great hiking trails and parks.
That's right. Terrywell Park is roughly 700 acres with about 300 acres around it. That's been preserved but not necessarily contiguous. The Ives Trail runs about 15 miles all the way into Ridgefield. So you definitely can get your hiking on here in Danbury, and we encourage people to do so. Richter Park is over on the west side of the city. Also has a significant amount of hiking trails. It's a great place to be, and we're very, very proud of our city.
Excellent. Mayor Mark Button, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us here, and congratulations, 28 years running as a Tree City for Connecticut. Thanks.
Here's the 28 more. We're very proud of it.
So Mayor Mark Boughton made a good point, Chris Donnelly, about how it's not just the trees, but the environmental preservation that communities are doing that play an important role in the quality of life. But it's also about the quality of our health. In the last few minutes that we have with you today, celebrating Tree City USA's all across Connecticut, what are a couple of the other positive attributes of having a lot of healthy and well cared for trees in one's community?
Okay. Well, I suppose we could all live life in our living rooms, sitting on our stuffed sofas and watching TV and living life from a distance. But it's not really the same as getting out there and doing it yourself. And that's certainly one of the things that trees do. They invite people outdoors. When one goes outside, even walking one's neighborhood, you notice the trees and you feel the shade, you feel the cool breeze, you smell the smells that come from nature, and they're all part of the world around you, and they encourage you, they excite you. So you mentioned health as one aspect of trees. There is a lot of work being done currently connecting nature and trees to people's health. And they show that people just generally are healthier when they bring more experience with nature into their lives. It's kind of a no-brainer, because if you're out enjoying nature, you're stimulated, you're enjoying life, you are then being more active, and you're just being much better connected to the world around you. And so that tends to make people feel better, act better. And I'd like to say, do better things as well.
I know in my own neighborhood in Waterbury, and even in my own yard, I feel bad when a tree comes down, either because it's just so old that it has become dangerous, or more room needs to be made so it doesn't fall onto key electrical lines and things like that. But here in Danbury, I note that you indicated that Danbury removals outpace plantings. But I get a sense that right now in Connecticut, we're kind of at a place over the past 5 or 10 years where a lot of the types of trees that we have reached their maturity or are well into old age for trees. And as a result of a combination of things like age, soil quality, chemicals in the air and things like that, there do seem to be a lot of trees being taken down. And that tends to get people's ire up. But could you explain a little bit about the kind of the cyclical nature of taking down more than you plant versus planting more than you take down?
Okay. First, just an observation that other people have made, but seems pertinent to the moment. In terms of the care they need, trees are an awful lot like people. We tend to need a lot of care in our early years. You remember all the doctor visits you had mm-hmm. when you were a kid. And then, of course, as we approach the end of our lives, we tend to need a lot of care. But in between, we can pretty much take care of ourselves. Trees are similar. So it is true that we do tend to, throughout Connecticut, to have an aging urban forest. We are an older state compared to, you know, other mm-hmm. parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And the trees are legacies of different periods in which there was extensive planting going on and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a reason it's called urban forestry and not just urban trees. And forestry pertains to the process that occurs with regards to keeping the forest going. So that means not just planting trees, but also caring for the trees, removing trees. We are kind of at a point now in which our removals are exceeding our plantings, statewide. And that's something to be paid attention to. Some of it has to do with growth. Some of it has to do with, just the fact that you deal with the immediate problem at hand. And so if you have an immediate problem with a tree that needs to come down, well, maybe replanting the tree isn't seen as such an immediate need. Mm-hmm. But they are. Trees are an investment in the future. If you care about the future, you're going to plant trees. There are many other factors involved in that, too. One of the things is to pay attention to the soils and the general environment in which we live. And don't simply plant to plant, but plant so that there is a purpose to that tree, so that 20 years and 50 years from now, that tree has a rightful place within the community that's going to be existing around it. Mm.
And homeowners and property owners can learn more about the rights and wrongs and the optimals versus the disadvantages through your office at the DEEP?
Absolutely. There are many good resources. Certainly the DEEP, we have our website, ct.gov/DEEP/urban forestry. A lot of good information on those pages. So that's one of the things we work very hard to make sure we get the right information out there.
Excellent. And the DEEP here in Connecticut encourages all communities to celebrate trees and to celebrate Arbor Day. It also encourages the recognition of communities that have gone the extra step and have become Tree City USAs. We're in one today here in Danbury, celebrating 28 years, one of the legacy communities here in the state of Connecticut, with Chris Donnelly. He's the Urban Forestry Coordinator for Connecticut DEEP's Forestry Division. We want to thank Mayor Mark Boughton for taking a few minutes to chat with us, as well as all the great information. Chris, learned a lot. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, John.
Right. Got a brand new friend on the program this morning, and only appropriate that we have David Brandt on the show because we just finished talking about Tree City USA celebrations and legacy tree cities all across the state. And now we're going to talk about, in a much more concentrated way, a very important initiative that's going on, a forest preservation initiative being led by the Aspetuck Land Trust in partnership with the Wilton Land Conservation Trust. This is going to be part of a larger regional land preservation effort called the Hudson to Housatonic Regional Conservation Partnership. And we've got the right guy to talk about it. David Brandt is the executive director of the Aspetuck Land Trust, and we'll welcome him now. David, thanks for joining us on the program.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So this is pretty exciting news, not something that happens every day for any organization to suddenly find out that they have the opportunity to sort of be the puzzle piece that is the nose of the Mona Lisa, so to speak. You guys are going to tie some really other important components together to not only strengthen and improve the health of the environment in the areas of this land block, this forest block in the Aspetuck Land Trust, but also have an impact on a much larger program. Before we get into discussion with that, though, just tell us a little bit about yourself and the Aspetuck Land Trust.
Sure. Well, Aspetuck Land Trust is a private nonprofit land conservation group. We were founded in 1966 in Westport by Barlow Cutler Watton. who was trying to prevent a hospital from being built on a salt marsh in downtown Westport in the early 1960s. And those are the days when people used to fill in salt marshes because they smelled and, there were a lot of mosquitoes in them. Mm-hmm. And so she thought otherwise and organized an effort to prevent that hospital, a hospital from being built on a salt marsh. And from there went on to start the Conservation Commission in Westport and the Aztec Land Trust. I think she realized the need for land trusts, in coming in and preserving land and especially land that was at threat from development. So we've since grown to be a four-town land trust. We serve four towns, Westport, Easton, Fairfield, and Weston. And we have about 150 properties in those towns. We do own a little bit of land in Reading and Wilton and Bridgeport. We have about 1,100 members, people that support us annually through their annual financial contributions to support the work that we do to preserve open space.
Mm. I remember back 20 plus years ago when I was engaged in the Oxford Land Trust, and it was just a few dozen people who really cared about the property and did a little fundraiser mailer every year and an activity or two for folks. But your organization, the Aspetuck Land Trust, is very, very community centric, and you have gone far beyond the borders of the land trust properties and forests. You actually engage with all home and property owners in all four of these communities on land preservation and environmental health initiatives, right?
Well, that's our plan. So we preserve land, right? And but we don't own all the land in our towns. In between all of these preserved open spaces that we own, or the town might own, or Connecticut Audubon Society might own, our homeowners. And homeowners are landowners. And how they take care of their yards and their properties, the things they do in their own yards, really can have an impact, on the ecology of the area and our environment. So everything flows downhill. So if somebody's using herbicides and pesticides, fertilizers, that's all going right down into the Sound. So what we're hoping to do is, as we're putting our boots on the ground to try to preserve these last big parcels of land in our towns and connect them all into a greenway, which I'd love to talk a little bit more about. We have big plans to create basically an 18,000-acre greenway that runs through our four towns. All those homeowners in that greenway can contribute by changing up how they take care of their own yards, make mm-hmm. a real difference.
So at what point are you in this greenway establishment?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been working on a forest block project in Weston and Wilton, where we're trying to buy 350 acres of land to preserve a much larger forest block that's 2,000 plus acres in size. We are in the process of identifying similar properties, large properties in our other towns, Fairfield, Westport and Easton, and then basically mapping out where the greenway will go within those four towns. So we're still in the planning phase, but it's a great initiative that's going to be able to, I think, excite people about the land trust and the work we're doing and how they can contribute. I think people are really looking for ways that they can have an impact. And we hear a lot of bad news these days about global warming and this and that. Well, it can be as simple as changing up the way you do lawn care to, do something a little more sustainable, maybe organic. Plant a pollinator plant so you can support butterflies and bees. Instead of mowing up to the stream in your backyard, so your lawn goes right up to the stream, well, what about maybe making a little buffer there? So there's simple things that people can do that can really have a big impact. So if we're successful, we haven't laid out kind of our goals yet in terms of where we want to go and in terms of, how many people we want to switch to organic land care, for example. But you can imagine if we have 1,000 people in our four-town region that are changing up how they take care of their yards, that can really add up and make a big difference.
Well, it's pretty exciting. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with David Brandt. He's the director of the Aspetuck Land Trust. They are engaged, as you're hearing, in a number of preservation and environmental enhancement initiatives, including the Weston Wilton Forest Block program, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But, David, the other thing is, you know, it's great that not only are the folks in the communities taking the land trust work seriously, but so is the state of Connecticut. They recently gave you a grant for a modest preservation initiative, didn't they?
They did. We bought 38 acres in Weston, which is a part of this Weston Wilton Forest Block initiative, and the state gave us a grant for upwards of $170,000 for that property, which we purchased for around $370,000. So, you know, it's wonderful that there's still funding out there, you know, for land preservation. It does have a positive impact on, you know, on our communities.
And we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the engagement of one of the world's greatest philanthropists, Paul Newman, Connecticut native, now, of course, long passed away, but still, you know, as he always aspired to do, providing framework and things for future generations to enjoy. And in fact, he played an important role in establishing what I guess was the largest parcel the Aspetuck group now oversees.
That's right. That's the 1,009-acre Troutbrook Valley Conservation Area in Easton and Weston. We have over 20 miles of trails. It's a place that you can really feel like you're getting away right within Fairfield County. And we purchased a big piece of that property in 1999, and Paul Newman came out and supported it. He showed up at a Easton community meeting with his daughter Lissy, who's on our board today. And his involvement, I think, really galvanized the community and got people excited about saving that open space. And, you know, I think the point is that, you know, you may not be Paul Newman, but you can make a difference too, you know, by making a donation to Aspetuck Land Trust or any nonprofit, you know, in our community, or planting pollinators in your yard, or changing up to organic land care. You know, it's really, individuals can have a big impact, and he certainly had a big impact on our ability to buy Troutbrook Valley, which we paid $11.3 million for. Mm-hmm. The state was also a significant contributor to that project as well. But we have over 10,000 people a year that enjoy that open space. So, there's a lot of public benefit that people are benefiting from that open space.
Yeah. It's also important, David, I think, to remind folks that this is not just for the trees. It's for everything indigenous and native that live under it. And that is also brings wildlife preservation into the picture, right?
That's right. I mean, we preserve open space, and we preserve open space for public benefit. People hike, they bike, they pick blueberries on our properties, but there's also wildlife that live on these spaces too. And so it's very important that they have habitats and room to roam, which is one of the reasons why these forest block projects are so important, because, you know, it's one thing to have an open space here or an open space there, but it's another when you're talking about creating a much more contiguous kind of land base that gives wildlife room to wander. So these wildlife, you know, they like varying habitats. They like these large open spaces in which to roam. They have these disbursement corridors. One good example is bears. I mean, we have now bears down in Fairfield County, and it's really important to have this protected open space so they have space to roam.
Excellent. Well, let's in the last few minutes that we have with you, David, let's switch gears back to the Weston Wilton Forest Block, and not just the important role this would play as a standalone purchase, but also the role it will eventually play in this Hudson to Housatonic River initiative.
Yeah. Well, the Hudson to Housatonic Initiative is a regional conservation partnership, which is basically a group of land trusts that are coming together to talk about land preservation between the Hudson in New York and the Housatonic in Connecticut. So, you know, Aspetuck Land Trust is a regional land trust kind of within that larger land area. So we're trying to figure out things in our own four towns, and in our case also working with Wilton Land Conservation Trust. You know, it's important to have kind of a larger view of the landscape when it comes to preserving land. So that Hudson Housatonic Initiative is really encouraging land trusts to talk with each other across town lines to preserve larger swaths of land that form kind of a connected corridor between the Hudson to Housatonic. And this is a tough landscape to preserve land in because it's exurban, suburban. You know, we're not up in northern Connecticut or someplace out in the middle of Montana, you know, where there's thousands and thousands of acres. So it's a little trickier to preserve land in our neck of the woods. It's really impossible to preserve any land if you're not proactive and talking to other land trusts and kind of working hard in your communities to identify, you know, these connectivity opportunities, which is what we're doing in Western Wilton. But the Hudson Housatonic Initiative is a great, great, great initiative that, you know, is going to get more land preserved.
And this Weston Wilton Forest Block Initiative was just announced a little over a month ago by you and the Aspetuck Land Trust. But I'm very much looking forward into making this the first of at least a two-part chat with you and perhaps some other members. Maybe we'll come down and actually visit with you on site so we can be in and see through the eyes of our radio voices what's going on down there as this initiative progresses and you engage more homeowners who are in that sort of Housatonic to Hudson corridor and see how that's all going and talk a little bit more about that in the future. But for now, this is exciting enough, and you guys have your plates full down there at the Aspetuck Land Trust. We want to let people know if they want to learn more about this, perhaps send a donation, visit one of the properties and do some hiking or more of them. They can go to Aspetuck Land trust.org. That's Aspetuck landtrust.org. Our guest this morning for this first in a couple of visits, I hope, is David Brandt. He is the executive director of Aspetuck Land Trust, and great stuff you got going down there, David, and we're so glad we could make this a companion piece to our Tree City USA segment with the DEEP, and I look forward to talking with you again hopefully by the end of the summer and see how this is all shaping up. So thanks so much. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voket@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voket, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.